The thing about depression, it's gonna get better, I promise. The thing about depression is that it magnifies the bad and diminishes the good. Nothing good is ever good enough, and anything bad leads to crippling sadness. And the worst part is the loneliness you feel when you're caught up in it. Now, Carol was the only one who could take that loneliness away, the only one who could touch it, which is why it was so hard when we broke up after 7 years. But the thing that kept me from going over the edge was that we actually kept sleeping together. And sex is great for depression. Wow, it is like a miracle drug, really. It's way better than Prozac. It's awesome. We should all be able to get a prescription for this. We're about a year and a half into this new cutting-edge therapy. When I went to a coffee shop to see a friend of mine play guitar and sing. And I'm standing in line before the show to get my coffee, and I feel someone touch my elbow behind me, and I turn around, and it's Carol. And she just smiled at me and went to sit over with some mutual friends of ours, some girlfriends over in the corner. And I thought, wow, that's really nice. She always had that beautiful smile that just made me feel good. And I hadn't seen her in a little while, and I just felt good. And so the show begins, and I'm watching my buddies sing and play, and I'm looking at Carol over there, enjoy the show. And about 10 minutes in, this guy walks in, and he walks up to Carol, and he puts his arm around her. And then he starts running his hand up and down her back, really sensually. And I realize it's her boyfriend. And I didn't know, you know? And it was like we were breaking up all over again. Except it was worse, because not only was it in front of friends, this time I knew there was not going to be any medicine. And it was even worse. I took it worse because I couldn't get away. They were between me and the door, and the place was packed, and I'm like 10 feet away from him. And I can watch this guy run his hand up and down her back, up and down her back, and up and down her back for 20 minutes. It was bad. And I started hyperventilating, and couldn't breathe. I was shaking. Finally, there's a break in the show, and I run out of the coffee shop, and I throw my coffee in the street, and I jump in my car, and I go home, and I get a razor blade out of the medicine cabinet, and I try to kill myself. Now, I don't remember a lot about those first couple hours on the floor of my living room that night. I know I was crouched down on the floor, and I had this screaming in my head, and I couldn't breathe, and I was pressing so hard with that razor blade against my wrist, just begging for, just pull it the right way. I was pressing so hard, and I was shaking that hole, and I couldn't do it, and I couldn't do it, and I'm pressing so hard. And finally, my body just gave out. I had no more energy. I just collapsed. And I found some phone number, some 800 number. I don't know how I had this, where I found it. And I called the suicide hotline. Never done anything like that before. Called this hotline, and I got a guy on the phone who could not have been less impressed with my little situation. I don't know if he was burned out or lost a couple that night. I don't know what the deal was. I'm like 2 minutes into my story about the boyfriend and the coffee shop. He's like, buddy, hold on a second. Do you have a plan on how you're going to kill yourself? I have a razor blade here. He goes, razor? No, way too messy. Way too messy, pal. And it hurts, too. Do not, trust me, don't want to use a razor blade. Yeah. What about a gun? Do you have a gun in the house? I'm like, no, I don't have a gun. He says, pal, are you sure you don't have a gun in the house? And I go, yeah, I'm vegan. We don't have guns, generally. And he goes, vegan? Oh, concerned about your health, are you? Well, I like to make good choices, yeah. He says, what about pills? Do you got pills in the house? And I go, I don't know. I think I got some Advil in the bathroom. And he goes, Advil? Really? You don't have anything stronger than Advil? And you go, well, I don't like to take drugs if I don't have to. You know, it's like, oh, back to your health again, huh? Is that where we're at? So this goes on for over an hour. He berates my lack of planning. I cry. He tells me to go to the hospital. I tell him I haven't met my deductible, so I cry some more. And finally, I just pass out. I just completely pass out. I don't know if he counted that as a save. I guess. I don't know. So I wake up the next morning on the floor of my living room, and I am utterly ashamed, completely ashamed of myself. Not because I tried to kill myself, but because I failed. I failed again. Another thing I failed at. And I look down at the floor and I see the check that I wrote my son for all the money I had in the bank. And then I see the note that I wrote. And I look at that note and I think, you know, I should just go down the street to the bridge over I-5 and jump. Just do it now. Just before you even think about it. It's 90 feet. No turning back. People do it all the time. Just go. Just go now. Do it. Don't fail. Do it. And I look down at that note again. And this will tell you where my brain was at the time. I look at the note and I go, it's got yesterday's date on it. No, can't. And I think, what? I don't want to cross off yesterday's date and put today's date. And what if I go to the bridge and I can't do it? I got to come back. Then I cross off today's date and put another date. I mean, there's nothing. The only thing worse than leaving a suicide note is leaving a suicide note with a bunch of dates crossed off. Like, oh, I didn't do it that day. And then that was a bad day. So I come up with a plan. And I think maybe even a plan the suicide guy would be proud of. I would ask the universe for a sign that I should stick around, that I was worth something, that I should live. But in the meantime, I would stop eating because I didn't want to spend the rest of my life waiting for some sign from the heavens. You know, I mean, I wanted to put a deadline on this. So that seemed to be okay. That seemed to be, so I didn't stop eating altogether immediately. I just ate less and less as the months went by. And that seemed okay, partly because I didn't have much of an appetite anyway, and partly because I liked the idea of slowly disappearing. I kind of had felt that way for a long time. So I ate less and less as the months went by. And honestly, if you start out vegan, you don't have far to go. So after like a month, like my whole diet is basically broccoli and turnips. It's like death by salad. But as soon as I make this deal with the universe, weird things started to happen. For one thing, my buddy Mark started coming over to my house all the time. Now, I've known Mark for a long time. He's one of my best friends. But Mark's one of those guys that never leaves the house. He doesn't go anywhere. He goes to work, he goes to, home, and he goes to the dollar store to buy his groceries. And that's it. It's like a hermit with three caves. All of a sudden, he's like banging on my door all the time, and he didn't know the whole story. He just, you know, he knew I was having a hard time. He's like, let's go out for a walk, let's do this. And at least three or four nights a week, he would drag me over to his house to watch movies. But we'd already seen all the movies there were to see, so the only thing left that we had to see were episodes of The Walking Dead. Which, if you're trying to give someone a reason to live, is the worst show ever. The most depressing worst show. The next thing that happened was my friend Eve called me out of the blue. And I hadn't seen Eve in like 20 years. We'd kept in touch here and there, but we hadn't seen each other in over 20 years. And she calls me up and she said, hey, I'm driving up from California to Spokane to see my grandchildren. I want to stop in and catch up. Now, this made me very nervous. Now, Eve, you see, Eve is a 75-year-old hippie who lives in a bus and runs a very successful grow operation in Humboldt County. And Eve's magical power, Eve has this magical power that I did not want to deal with. Her magical power is this. If there's something you don't want to talk about, she will get you to talk about it. Except it's like waterboarding, but with hugs. You know, it's like... It's hug boarding, basically, is what it is. So, of course, she comes up. She drives the bus up, and within 10 minutes, she's got the whole story out of me. And she says, "Say no more. I'm moving in. Somebody has to keep an eye on you." And I said, no, I'm not good company now. It's a tiny apartment. I don't think I'd be a very good roommate. And what about your farm? And she's like, it's Washington. I can get weed anywhere. So she moves in. The 75-year-old hippie just moves in. And it was just as awkward as I thought it would be. First day I come home after work, she's sitting on the couch in her bathrobe, and she goes, "Oh, I forgot to ask you, how do you feel about nudity?" No, there's no nudity. We're all wearing clothes here. You're wearing clothes. We're always wearing clothes. 24/7 clothing. Always. Always clothing. Always. Now, when I wasn't being terrified by The Walking Dead, and I wasn't avoiding suspicious-looking brownies that Eve would leave around the apartment, I was walking. And I walked everywhere. I walked for hours. It was the only thing that could get me out of my head. I just walked all over town. And one day, I'm walking through town, and I see a bunch of people clustered in front of this doorway. And they're smoking and talking, and I get up to them, and I realize it's where the AA meetings happen in town. And I realize, as I get there, I got to go in. I just knew I had to go. Something was pulling me in. And I've never had a problem with alcohol. I've never done drugs. I've never had to go to an AA meeting. But I knew I was going in for some reason. So when they were done smoking and talking, they walked in, and I followed them. And I sat in some rickety old chair against the wall, and they started the meeting. And they always start the meeting the same way. Random people, recite the 12 steps. So someone over there will say, admit you're powerless over alcohol. And then someone over there would say, admit that only a higher power can return you to sanity. And when they would say the steps, they would look right at me. Right at me. And as I listened to them, these words started to make sense. I had never heard these words, but they make a lot of sense. Someone would say, make a list of everyone you hurt and apologize to them. And I'd be like, yeah, that would really be a good thing for me to do. And someone would say, turn your life over to a higher power. I'm like, oh, I've been meaning to do that. I really ought to do that. That would totally help. And by the end of the meeting, after an hour, I am in shock because I have never seen so much humility and forgiveness, ever. I didn't know people could treat each other that way. So I kept coming back. And I went back every day. And I went to the same place, at the same room, at the same time. I sat in the same chair. Because every time I went, I heard something I needed to hear. Well, after a couple months, I wanted to thank them. I had never shared anything in the meeting. I would just sit and listen. But I had to say thank you at some point. So at one meeting, I finally said, look, I need to thank you guys. You don't know why I'm here, and I don't even know why I'm here. But coming to these meetings, it means a lot to me, and it means a lot to me that you let me sit here and just listen and not make me participate. And I said, I don't know if you guys know this, but whenever you say the 12 steps at the beginning of the meeting, you look right at me as though you know I need to hear these words. And I just want you to know that you're right. I do need to hear these words. And this lady turned to me, and she had like 30 years sobriety under her belt. And she said, you know, Paul, we have noticed that you've been coming, and we're really glad you're here. We don't know exactly why you're here. Everyone comes for different reasons, but we're happy you found us. And I want you to know that we will love you until you can learn to love yourself. And I just about broke down, man. I'd never heard anyone say that to me. I didn't know I needed to hear that. And then she said, the reason we look at you when we say these 12 steps is because they're actually written on the wall right over your seat. You sit right under the poster every single time. We can't remember this stuff. We're just reading the thing. All right. Felt good for a while. Now, even though I had friends in my life keeping an eye on me and strangers in a room telling me they loved me, it was actually getting worse. First of all, I was starving. I mean, I was really, this is months in, this is 6 or 7 months in, and I'd lost about 30 pounds. Cookies were starting to show up on my chair anonymously at work. And I was getting pretty cranky because that's what hunger does to you. You start to not really know what you're doing. And one night I was home and I couldn't take it anymore. Eve was out working the land somewhere. And I just had to, I just stormed out of the house because I wasn't getting my sign. The universe hadn't shown me that I was supposed to stick around. And I'm stomping around my neighborhood at night, yelling in the moon and scaring possums and just rah! Because I had held up my end of the deal. I'm starving here. Where's my sign? I'm doing my part. If I'm worth something, you need to show me now, because this is going to end soon. This isn't going to last much longer. And right then, I get text. I look at this text message, and it's my friend Kathy. She goes, "Hey, just call and see how you're doing. Just call and check in. I know how you're doing." I write her back, "I'm fine." And she writes back, "Okay, well, just want to let you know I stopped by the apartment, knocked on your door, nobody answered, so left some soup on the porch for you. Hope you're okay." And I have never been so angry at soup. Like, no, I don't need soup. Soup is not what I'm looking for. I have soup. All right, I need burning bush, okay? Land of Canaan, Red Sea. I have soup. Soup is not the sign. By this time, I'm back at my apartment. I'm just furious, and I see the stupid soup on the porch, and I step over the soup to show the soup I don't care. And I open the door, and I'm hit with this wave of heat. I'm blown back by this heat. And I stagger forward, and I see, and the kitchen is just glowing, glowing orange, just I've never seen it. Just the whole thing is enveloped in this orange glow. And I run to the kitchen and I see that I'd left a burner on. And I had left a pot on the burner and it's glowing like a forge, like everything around it is, the coconut oil is melted. There's a bag of popcorn over here ready to explode. The paper's curling up, plastic's melting. I don't want to hurt anyone. I don't want to burn this apart. Please don't let me hurt other people. I only want to hurt myself. Don't let me hurt someone else. And I run into the kitchen and I turn off the burner and I just fall to the floor. And I start saying, why did you do this? Why did you do this? Why now? Why this? And after a few minutes, the whys turned to thank yous. And I didn't know why, but I just started saying thank you over and over and over and over and over. Now, I've learned a lot of things since that night in the coffee shop. My whole life, I've been looking for something to believe in. I've been chasing faith. What I've learned, what I know now, is that faith is a choice. It's just a choice. You don't find it. You just choose to have it. The other day, I found myself in the kitchen. I was cooking. I can do that now. I'm eating. Thank you. And I found myself dancing to the radio alone. Just me and Sheryl Crow. And I thought, man, I used to be so scared of being alone, terrified of being alone. And now I know that I'm not alone. Even when I'm the only one in the room, my life is filled with love, absolutely filled with love. And I know that dancing with someone is great, man. It's sexy and romantic, but dancing alone is joyous. Thank you.